U.S. government officials have been drugging migrant children. Yes, you heard correctly. U.S. government officials have been drugging migrant children. Yesterday, a federal judge found government officials were giving psychotropic medication to migrant children at a Texas facility, and they did this without first seeking permission from parents or guardians. Separately, a 6-year-old migrant girl who was separated from her family was sexually abused by another child while in government custody at an Arizona facility. That's according to a report in The Nation. This is in addition to the numerous traumas children separated from families are experiencing. Some are locked in cages, in some cases, forced to live in unsanitary facilities. Producer Martin Smith is here to tell us about his latest Frontline documentary, Separated, Children at the Border. It airs on PBS tonight at 10 p.m. Martin, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So when did you begin this project?
I came onto this project 5 weeks ago when we got a green light that we wanted to take a lot of work that had been done by producer Marcela Gaviria, who had been looking into this for over a year. But basically, the rush to the finish line began just a little over a month ago. So we put this together very quickly. We had an excellent team working on this very hard for 7 days a week and practically 24 hours a day.
You visited some of these shelters. Which ones in particular?
We were not able to get inside any of the shelters. Marcela, the producer, had gone in to a couple of the processing centers prior to the announcement of separation policy, or at least prior to its formal adoption. It had actually, one of the things that we show in the documentary is this practice of separating children from their parents was something that was put in motion really right after Trump took office. But it was sort of opposition to this was muted. They ran a pilot program for a few months, and by October of 2017, they were running this as a matter of practice, but it wasn't announced until May 7th of 2018 that when Jeff Sessions on a border trip to San Diego made it clear that this was going to be the policy, and it ramped up from there to, as we all know, separating over 2,000 more children, 2,000 to 3,000 from their parents.
So to be clear, your producer, she went to inside of some of these shelters beforehand? I just want to make sure I understand that.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, this policy was started in October 2017, as you said, and it was just continuing. That's when the pilot happened. What happened between 2017 and 2018? What was the trigger that made everyone realize, oh, my God, this is happening?
Yeah, and actually you push it back a few months into the summer, because it was during the summer that it really started to, people started to notice that was going on, but they couldn't get confirmation from the government that they were in fact doing this. But there were rumors, and in fact, we were down in Tijuana right after the election, and the rumors were spreading there that when Trump was in office, he would be doing this. So there was knowledge of this, there was practice. But it wasn't until we got to May and, as I said, that the Attorney General made this announcement. And then slowly it became it was in the news. And then, of course, when ProPublica published the tape of the young girl asking to call her aunt, that really sparked outrage. When people could actually hear a child's voice desperate to be able to connect over the phone, and being denied the right, that's when it really went into high gear, and you had a lot of opposition to it at that point.
Your documentary begins with a description of that Texas-Mexico border. How long is that border?
Well, it's about 1,900 miles, and it's the U.S.-Mexican border, is about 1,900 miles. 700 or so of those miles are, there's a fence or a wall, and then the rest of it is covered with aerostat blimps. And since 2001, a a doubling of the number of Border Patrol agents. One thing that people don't seem to understand, given all the rhetoric coming out of the administration, is that as measured by the arrest of people coming across the border, the numbers are way down. They were up to, there were like something like 1.6 million back in 2000. Now we're talking about 300,000, and it's been rather steady for a number of years. There is no crisis at the border like there was a few decades ago.
So that begs a question, Martin. So some people would say, is that because of these policies? Is that because of this policy of separating children from families? Is it, in fact, working?
Well, no, because the numbers have stayed relatively flat. There was a decrease right after Trump took office, but it wasn't altogether that big of a decrease. so there was some deterrence at that point. But as I said, the numbers, it's about 300,000 a year coming across that are being arrested. That number has been there relatively flat for some time. So as a deterrent, it doesn't seem to have made a big difference.
So how are these agents monitoring the border? Because there's so much space. How are they doing it?
Well, they do it by patrolling the Rio Grande, the river, and by vehicle along the border fence, New Mexico, Arizona, California, and aerostat blimps that surveil from above. They also have several layers in some places of enforcement where they have people stationed at the border, and then you go inland a matter of miles, and there's another line of defense. But, you know, people are still going to come across. People that are fleeing violence in Central America are determined to get to safety. And they run the gauntlet of coming up through Mexico, which is an extraordinarily risky and potentially deadly journey for them. Not all of them make it. So they're driven by these push factors, as it's put, in Central America, of extreme violence and threat to their livelihood.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with producer Martin Smith. He's talking to us about his latest Frontline documentary, Separated, Children at the Border. It airs on PBS tonight at 10 p.m. Martin, when the documentary goes through, one of the first people we meet is a woman who's just heartbreaking, Maritza. Tell us about her story.
Well, you know, I went down to McAllen, Texas, as soon as we started working on this, and I was in a shelter run by a woman named Sister Norma Pimentel. It's a Catholic charity group, and just walked up to this woman, Maritza, who was sitting there with her child, and began to talk to her. She had come through at a time when children were being separated. By pure luck and grace of God, she was able to keep her 9-month-old boy with her, Wilfredo. And the day that I met her was the same day that President Trump announced that he was reversing himself and that they were no longer going to separate. So she got in by the skin of her teeth. But she wears an ankle bracelet. She's monitored by the government, and she's very fearful that that her asylum application will be denied and that she will be sent back. But she, we saw her get on a bus, and it was a 2 or 3 day bus ride to get to see her, to be with her brother, already living in the U.S. in Virginia. So she's every 15 days reporting to the authorities and hoping that her asylum claim can be accepted.
How was she caught? How was she actually caught?
She was coming across the river in a raft, and they caught her. She wandered around a little bit after she got here. One thing people don't understand is that these migrants aren't coming in and trying to avoid Border Patrol. They're coming in and turning themselves over to Border Patrol because under the law, both U.S. and international law, they have every right to claim asylum. They go through what's called a credible fear interview to establish that, in fact, their situation in their home country is is a threat to their lives. She came in, wandered about, and turned herself in. Many of them, what zero tolerance has put into effect is this idea that everybody who comes across illegally, in other words, they don't come through a border checkpoint set up by the U.S. Border Patrol, will be arrested. Some of these people don't know that's the case. They don't know that if they come across a river or a border where there is no border station, they are breaking the law. It's a misdemeanor. It's not a major violation, but they don't even know that much. And they're brought up by human smugglers who bring them to wherever they want to bring them and say, there you go, go across the river, walk across the border, climb the wall, climb the fence, which some of them do.
And they don't know what's waiting for them on the other side.
And they don't know exactly, but they know to turn themselves in. They don't want to be on the run. They want to turn. They want asylum. So they know that much. But they, Maritza did not know, for instance, that she risked having her son taken away from her. And she basically just told them, no, you're not. I'm nursing him. You can't take him away from me. And, you know, I think there is some discretion on the part of the people running these centers to allow some to be together and others to be separated.
But thousands,
she was fortunate.
Thousands of other stories didn't end up so well. You met a young man from El Salvador, and his story did not end well. He was separated from his daughter?
Yeah, he came in, and within, 24, 72 hours, I don't remember the exact length of time, he comes across. Again, he crossed illegally, not at a checkpoint. And I should point out, some that come into those checkpoints are told to come back, that they can't come in now. And these towns along the border, some of them are very dangerous. They're controlled by cartels and smuggling cartels or drug cartels. And it's not a comfortable situation. So there's a great incentive to get across. And many of them will come to the border to come in legally and be told, no, we can't take you today. Go away, come back in a few days. This man you're mentioning from El Salvador comes across with his 6-year-old daughter, Maybelline, and is separated with in a short time. And she is sent off to Arizona, and he stays in a detention center in Texas. And then a few weeks later, he's told, this is what he says, is that your daughter can come back to you, but you have to agree to be deported and drop your asylum claim. Well, he wanted to get his daughter back to him. He was distressed at what kind of what she was going through. So he agreed to this. They put him on a plane back to Salvador without his daughter. So he gets back to Salvador, where I met him, and he's distraught. That she is in, and he eventually learns, he doesn't even know where she is, but he eventually learns that she's in a shelter in Arizona. And it takes, a matter of more weeks before she comes back to Salvador and joins him. But
so they were separated for weeks? How long were they separated?
33 days in that case. 33 days, and when she got back to him, he says that she had changed.
She had changed. How did she change?
The way we both witnessed it, because we went down first to meet him when he was without her, and then again we went back to see him and her together, and it was obvious to us that she was distraught to be without him for even a few seconds or minutes. And he talked about how she doesn't want to go to school because she's afraid that this will happen all over again, that her time with him is limited, you know, that her time with him is running out. So she stays very close by her father. She's a 6-year-old girl. She didn't understand that she would ever see her father again. And if anybody listening or you has had the experience of losing a parent even for a short time at a young age, it's quite disturbing. And this went on for 33 days.
So she's 6 years old and she thought she'd lost her father. I'm Duarte Geraldino, and you are listening to filmmaker Martin Smith, who's telling us about his latest Frontline documentary, Separated. It's the inside story of what's happening to immigrant children separated at the border. Martin, your documentary is extraordinary. I had a chance to take a sneak peek, and I was struck by the images, but also by some of the disturbing details of the journey from Mexico and other places to the United States. And one detail that still haunts me is the fact that, according to some of your interviews, women routinely take birth control pills as they embark on this journey because they believe that they will likely be raped and they don't want to carry a child.
That's right. According to Amnesty International, 6 out of 10 women who make the journey are subjected to a rape. And they take not only pills, they take injections to prevent becoming pregnant. So it's for anybody, it's a very risky journey. You have to really want it to run the gauntlet. But of course, women face a worse journey than a man.
We're talking to producer Martin Smith about his latest Frontline documentary, Separated: Children at the Border. It airs tonight on PBS at 10. Martin, can you describe some of the other challenges of this journey to the United States?
Well, you have a few choices. First, if you're coming out of Salvador or Honduras or Guatemala, you first have to get to the Guatemala-Mexico border. So you have to cross Guatemala. And once you get into Mexico, many of them, especially those without a lot of means, look for what's called the Beast. The Beast is a freight train that can take you from southern Mexico up to the border. The Beast is not easy. It's a freight train. They ride on top of the train, and they can't get on at the station, so they have to jump on board as it's moving. And some of them don't make it. Some lose limbs. And gangs routinely roam the rooftops of these and take money from people because they know that these are people who are traveling to the U.S. and are taking all their belongings and money with them. And they routinely rob them, or if they fight, they'll throw them off the train. So that's one choice. Another choice is to, if you're of means, it costs you about $7,000 U.S. To get a coyote or human smuggler to take you up, and that journey can go well or it can go badly. It depends. If you have a good coyote and they'll put you in a series of cars and vans and you will arrive at the border as quickly as 8-9 days. Sometimes it takes longer. Sometimes you're stopped by the Mexican immigration police and deported back to your country. All sorts of stories. And sometimes you're with a smuggler who runs against another gang. Many of the smugglers are affiliated with gangs, and a rival gang may come across them and if you're his currency, they'll trade you in, and you're in trouble. So not everybody makes it. So it's a risky journey.
Earlier, we were talking about that 6-year-old Maybelline and her dad. How specifically did they come into the country? They didn't come on a boat. They were packed with a group of people, right?
Well, they came up and had a coyote that they paid, who got them up to the U.S. relatively quickly and without incident, except that they were packed into the backs of container trucks with, just with no place to stand practically, and with no food and very hot temperatures. And so Arnovis, the man you're talking about, remembers being in there for something like 50 hours with nothing but an apple and a cracker.
And his 6-year-old daughter.
And his 6-year-old daughter, no place to go to the bathroom. Horrible conditions in the truck, in the back of the truck, going up to the border, and then left off in Reynosa, which itself is a very, very dangerous place to be. It's controlled by a cartel. They're wanting to get across then to McAllen, Texas. And they were able to get across in a raft.
One of the people that President Obama selected to help deal with this problem is Amy Pope. Describe her and her role in this.
Yeah, they faced in 2014 a huge surge. The number of people coming across the border at that time, many of them were what's called unaccompanied minors. These were kids, teenagers mostly, but some men much younger, who were traveling up without a parent, maybe going to join a parent in the U.S. And somehow in 2014, as President Obama was proposing his Dreamers Act, where he would give a certain amnesty to those who were raised in the U.S. By illegals but were born and raised in the U.S., the right to stay. This sent a message across the border that the smugglers exploited this and said, look, if you come in now, you're going to be able to stay. Obama's doing this this legislation. Well, that created a crisis at the border, and you had a huge surge in 2014 of something like 60 to 70,000 of these children coming up and across the border. You may remember it.
And you're saying the surge was because of this policy that Obama was pushing?
Well, it was used by the smuggling networks, and there was misinformation spreading all the way back to Central America, and that was causing a lot of people to come up at that time. It's not fully well understood all the push, all the reasons for that surge at that time, but that's certainly a large factor in this. I want to point out earlier, I mean, the president made the announcement when he, President Trump, and we'll get back to Amy Pope, I'm sorry, but that he said, you know, the Mexicans are coming up here, are bad people, they're rapists, called them bad hombres and all of that. Immigration from Mexico has dried up. In fact, it's reversed. More people are going from the U.S. to Mexico than from Mexico to the U.S. What we're looking at is a phenomenon in Central America, where these quasi-failed states there with gang violence, gangs fighting police, has created this exodus, people fleeing the violence. As far as Amy Pope, under President Obama was trying to deal with this problem, and suddenly he has this huge surge, and he has to decide what to do with it. And he's getting a lot of pressure from the Republicans and from the right and from the anti-immigrant constituency in the country to clamp down on the border. And he speeds up deportations. He got labeled the deporter in chief.
Yeah, famously labeled that.
Yeah. And and he was, you know, look, I mean, one thing you learn in covering this is this: it's extraordinarily difficult to get this right. I mean, you know, if you want to be really simple-minded about this, you open the border to everybody on the, you know, if you're on the that extreme, or you arrest everybody that's coming across if you're on the opposite extreme. But obviously, to come up with humane, sensible policy that hews to the ideals of the American dream, it's a very difficult policy. You have to really wrestle with this. And Obama was attempting to come up with some kind of solution, but in exchange for getting the Dreamers Act passed, he moved to toughen up the border situation, and he even built out the infrastructure of family detention centers because they felt that they needed to detain families as part of a deterrent policy of to prevent people from coming up.
Your documentary is fairly balanced, and you actually spoke with one man who blames President Obama for this crisis. Mike Vickers, what's his story?
Mike Vickers is an interesting character. He's a veterinarian and rancher on the border, and he also runs a local militia, and he is...
He runs a local militia.
Yeah.
Okay.
His militia is... he delights in finding what he calls illegal aliens, it would be his words, but migrants, and turning them into Border Patrol. So he's helping, essentially, Border Patrol. And he also has set up an electric fence to keep people off. He says it won't. He's amped it down so it won't kill you, but it'll roll your eyes back a little bit. Or that was his words. So you'll meet him in the documentary tonight. He's quite a character. But he also pulled out these large laminated posters that he was very proud to display of dead migrants. that he's found on his property.
Wait a minute. It was disturbing to watch. And I remember him holding these posters, which normally would be of something that evokes a little bit more pride, but they were dead bodies. You were there with him. What was your reaction to that when he pulled these things out?
It was my producer was actually there, and she's Colombian, and it gave her chills just talking to him, given that she's a Latina, and her reaction was of horror. I mean, he brings out these things. I'm not sure where he uses these, but as she reported it, he proudly displays these posters of dead migrants. There have been about 7,000 migrants that have died of hypothermia or dehydration along the southern border in the last couple of decades. So he finds these, and as he says, I'm black and white, I'm not gray. We have a law, we have to enforce it. He's also, and this you find this everywhere, under this he has this notion that people are coming up and are a drain on our economy. But in fact, the studies don't show that. People come up, they get jobs. They're very worried about their asylum claims, so they don't want to be in trouble with the law. Their crime rates are lower than that of Native American, Native-born Americans. And they pay taxes, contribute to the economy.
Did you ask him about the children? Children being separated from the border. We know that he takes photographs of corpses from people who were trying to cross the border who died there. We know thousands have. But what about the children?
We met Vickers before Trump had put in place that program, or before that program was really up and running, because we met him back in 2017, early in 2017. So I would guess that Mike Vickers would support that policy, and that he, you know, look, a lot of people will say it's unfortunate that it happens to these children. I feel bad about the children. It's sad. But they then turn around and blame the parents. The problem one has with that is that they're punishing children. If you want to conclude that their parents have sinned and deserve the punishment that they're getting, punishing the children is a step that I think many people, not just on the left but on the right, have found a step too far. So there's a lot of people that can't tell you what the best immigration policy should be, but they can tell you what it shouldn't be, and that is to punish children for coming up with a parent.
I know you were rushing to get this documentary put together, but is there one moment that sticks with you from this process?
You know, I would say that it was meeting the people that are coming across who have been labeled as rapists and bad people, all of the name-calling as a drain on the economy. I mean, one woman who came up with her 15-year-old daughter, climbed the wall into Arizona, and then was separated from her child. Her child was flown to a shelter in Texas, and she was kept in Arizona. And I asked her what she would say to the president after going through this and seeing the trauma that was visited upon her daughter after 38 days of being apart. And she said, what I would like to say to President Trump is that I apologize to him for coming in when I wasn't invited. And that the absolute decency of that was striking, that she would think that she owed the president an apology after having been separated from her child for 38 days and finding her daughter back with her, finding her changed, finding her angry, finding her temperamental. So that was a moment that struck me.
Is there a method that you are finding that parents are talking to their children after they've been reunited? Are they seeing anything differently? How do they make sense of this experience?
Well, my evidence here is anecdotal and it's limited. And I think there's a lot of work that's going to be done in the months to come. You know, the president has decided to throw this back in the news, to throw immigration front and center in the last couple of days. So the journalists are going to continue to dig into this. And I think the story and the question you just asked is a good one. But we need to collect a lot more information. One of the things that was very hard, you asked me earlier on, did I visit these detention centers? Journalists are, by and large, kept out. The government puts out some handout films, once in a while organizes a tour, but it's very, very limited. You're not really allowed to see what's going on. And a lot more work has to be done to find out just what has happened. You also led with the story of the judge deciding that children had been given psychotropic drugs without permission. The young girl, the six-year-old girl that we met in Salvador, reports that she was given injections. We can't tell you what they were, so we didn't report out what they were. But you know, one has to be concerned. Was she given a vaccination, or was she given a sedative? We don't know.
Even her. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Duarte Geraldino, and I've been speaking with filmmaker Martin Smith about his latest frontline documentary, Separated. It's the inside story of what's happening to immigrant children separated at the border. Separated airs on PBS and PBS.org tonight at 10. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you.